My grandmother used to say, you're not on the earth to mark time. You're on the earth to make difference in somebody else's life. And so you're here to do something to give back, because that's your only legacy.
Hello, welcome to episode 152 of the Smart Agents Podcast. As always, my name is Michael Walter, and I'll be your host. In today's episode, we are joined by 45-year real estate vet, Alexis Boland. Based in Pensacola, Florida, Alexis began her real estate career in 1978 and was with the same franchise for 39 years before joining Keller Williams Realty Gulf Coast in July of 2017. Over the course of her career, she has closed over 6,000 transactions, been recognized with countless awards, including a 2021 Lifetime Achievement Award from the Residential Real Estate Council, and has continued to give back to the real estate community by serving on such boards as the National Association of Realtors Professional Standards Committee and Professional Development Committee. Throughout our conversation, Alexis shares how she built such a successful career by being straightforward with clients and guiding them through the home selling process, and she explains why at 79 years old, she's still hustling every day. But before we get on to today's featured interview, make sure to subscribe to the Smart Agents Podcast. You can find the show on all major podcasting platforms such as Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and now Amazon Music. Also, if you or someone else on your team has an incredible story or tips to share with our community, send us a message at feedback@smartagents.com. We're always on the lookout for new stories to share. All right, let's get on to today's featured interview with Alexis Boland. I really had a blast speaking with her and love the message to always be seeking higher education opportunities to grow your business. If you could, just to start out, I'd love to have you introduce yourself to us a little bit, who you are and where you're at in the country.
So I'm Alexis Boland. I'm a broker associate with Keller Williams Realty Gulf Coast, and we're located in the most westerly city in Florida, in Pensacola. And so we're... To give you some geographics, we're 3 hours east of New Orleans. We're 1 hour from Mobile, Alabama, and 5 hours south of Atlanta. Takes me 6 hours to get to Jacksonville.
Right, absolutely. And you have a very large military population there, is that correct?
Yes, the Blue Angels.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, my son's a big-time Blue Angel fan, so anytime we drive that way, he always loves seeing the big statue on, was that I-10 there?
Yes. Yeah, I got the blues.
Yeah. Well, tell me a little bit about what got you started in real estate.
Oh, my goodness, Michael. So I was a waitress. I was a single mom for a lot of years. My own two children, raised my sister's little girl. No child support, no alimony. Buck an hour plus tips. Worked 3 waitress jobs to take care of us because I didn't have sense enough, I guess, to know that I could get some help like food stamps or something like that. Actually, I thought that was for people who were sick and couldn't work. So anyway, so I did that. I was a waitress 18 years, and then I remarried for a short period of time, and he was active duty military, retired, and then took a job here in the Pensacola area. And when we moved here, I just out of the clear blue sky decided I didn't want to wait tables anymore. I was going to sell real estate. And so here I am. We moved here in November of 1977. I started real estate school January of 78 and was told that I'd never make it in real estate here in Pensacola. I thought I could make a significant dent in the real estate market. The manager at the Officers Club out there told me I had another thought coming. So 45 years later, here I am.
All right. Proved him wrong, right?
Yes. Yes. Yeah. He would call me back and offer me a job. Apologize to me, but oh well.
There you go. Well, what was it about, real estate that really kind of stood out to you when you decided to make that jump?
Nothing. I have to tell you something. I was interviewing for a job. I was at Fort Gordon, Georgia before here in Augusta, and I was food and beverage manager of the Officers Club. So naturally, I went over there to the Officers Club here. It's called to ask for a job. And he didn't have a supervisor's job. He wouldn't give me a regular waitress job. And, good waitress, I can get a job anywhere. And so when he said, if you don't take this job, what are you going to do? My mouth opened and I said, I'm going to sell real estate. And that was it. So I think everybody in life has a calling. Some people never find it. And I think this is what I was meant to be, because in 1 year, I was the top agent in our office and kept going. And I was fortunate enough. I was with ERA Real Estate then. Spent 39 years as an ERA agent and was fortunate enough to be number one internationally three different times for them and stayed in the top five for God knows 30 some years, whatever, before I moved to Keller Williams about 7 years ago. Right. So that's it. There's nothing earth shattering about it. I just said, that's what I'm going to do.
Right. Well, what was it, you know, that got you, you know, such a strong hold on the business, you know, it's such a, you know, so quickly to where you were, you know, within that 1 year, you know, rising to the top of your office?
Well, I think the strong work ethics, you know, that I learned as a waitress, and I worked not only on the military base as a waitress, but I worked at some very fine restaurants and places on the Jersey Shore where I lived. And so I think it's the work ethic. And, you know, one thing I learned, of course, education. So I became an education sponge. And one thing I learned in the first little education class I took, our president then, Mac Havner, said, you know, one or two things has to happen. You have to do something to generate an incoming call, or you have to do something to make the outgoing call. And so that's how real estate's done. So either you got to call somebody, or you got to make sure they call you. And I thought, well, nobody's calling me because I don't know a soul here. So I got out and knocked on doors. So I knocked on 50 doors a day, every day. And while the other realtors were standing around the coffee pot complaining about double-digit interest rates, because when I got a license and we closed on our house in November of 77, it was 8.75%. And all they did was climb. And I'm a brand new agent. And by the end of 79, beginning of 80, we were in double digits. Right. And so I thought, well, you know, I can't do anything about the interest rate. And I would say this to agents today, quit winding up about the interest rate, quit agreeing with the buyers that this is terrible because it's not. Talk to your grandmother. They closed at 18% on something, or 22 or something if they're in California. But, you know, that's not your problem. You can't do anything about that. Here's your job. Find a seller that wants to sell and a buyer that can buy it and put the deal together and keep trucking and quit worrying about the interest rate because it is what it is. Yeah. I mean, it's just like, you know, we complain about the price of eggs at the grocery store. You either buy them or you don't. Grocer don't care. You know, that's just it. So it's up to you. It's not up to anybody else.
Right. So, you know, when you were seeing all the other agents, you know, kind of standing around and not doing anything, did once you started having success and started to, you know, get into people's homes and start getting those deals, did that kind of light a fire even more saying like, hey, no, this is working. I know what I'm doing here.
Frankly, I never paid any attention to what they were doing. Right. Because, you know, it's all about me. You know, it's what I'm doing. And so I really never paid a whole lot of attention to what they were doing, except that, you know, when we would have a light rain and there was no chance of thunder or lightning or anything, and I didn't have an appointment, I'd grab my umbrella and I'd head out the door and they'd say, where are you going? It's raining. And I'd say, I have to door knock. And I was door knocking in the light rain. And trust me, people will let you in. They would feel, I got business. They felt sorry for me. You know, like, oh, God, she's hustling because she's out here in the rain. So I would say to you, go do that. You know, you have to be different. You got to do something different than what people are doing. And everybody's looking for the magic pill at the end of the rainbow or something, and it's not there. It's just not there. So if you'll get out and meet people and be personable and don't be salesy, then you'll do business in spite of it. I mean, that's just how it is. You'll make a name for yourself that'll last forever.
Yeah. Do you think having the experience as, you know, in the restaurants and, you know, making, you know, small talk with your customers day in and day out, do you think that that really helped translate over to your real estate business?
Absolutely, because it's a people business. So we find that people who've been in the service industry of some kind do well in real estate. Your teachers make good realtors, nurses, anybody in that type of healthcare industry, waiters, waitresses, people like that, because they are used to conversing with people and they are used to helping take care of their needs, whatever they happen to be. Whether you want another cup of coffee or you're at the doctor's office and you got questions and the nurse is talking to you. So, you know, I really think that that absolutely helps. And you don't have to come from one of those professions. You can learn to do that. There's classes out there. You just go take them. You know, you need to become focused on higher education, period. Even in 45 years in real estate, I'll be 79 years old this year. I am still taking classes. You're still going to see me signed up for something or sitting in person in a class, because I don't think you ever get too old to learn. And when you stop learning, it's when they probably need to be shoveling the dirt.
What, you know, I really admire that, you know, somebody of your experience understanding that there's always something else for me to learn. There's some other way to be, you know, to do this job and to make a name for yourself in this industry. Has that something that's always been a part of who you are, you know, wanting to learn?
Yes. Yes. Education's always been a part of who I am. I speak and teach all over the nation. You know, I was fortunate enough when I was with ERA to be the first American agent to speak at the French Real Estate Convention and the Spanish Real Estate Convention. You know, I ruined them. They weren't doing real estate like we were when I got there, but they were after I left. And so education is always it. I'm the current chair, 2023 chair for education for Women's Council of Florida. I'm co-chair of RRC, Residential Real Estate Council, CRS, education chair. I serve on professional standards and professional development, which is the education arm at NAR. Also serve on those two committees at Florida Realtors. And I do a lot of speaking and teaching myself. So I just believe that, you know, we all can learn something. I don't care what it is. And, you know, it doesn't have to be a lightning bolt come down and hit you. It could be one or two words. Like I did a session for New York RRC yesterday, and I was talking to them about lead generation. And I said, get off the computer and stop buying leads and start talking to people you already done business with and people you know, go in a grocery store and stand by the cabbages and see how many people you recognize or that recognize you and talk to them. We quit doing that. I want you to also look at assumable loans. Mm-hmm. All right. You need to learn what to do to assume a government loan, because as we inch up in rate, which it looks like Fed's going to continue to inch, we hit 8%. Then somebody with a 3.5% FHA assumable loan, that house is going to be worth more money. It was back in when the rates were 18. It's going to happen again if they keep rates going up. And they were like deer in headlights. They were like, oh my God, I didn't know you could assume one of those loans. Well, now's the time for you to learn. And they've been in business for a while. These aren't newbies. And they've been in business for a while. So there's always something new to learn.
Yeah. When, I want to circle back to your involvement with all these organizations and the teaching that you do, but is the education and educating your buyers and sellers, is that a big part of your, you know, kind of, I don't want to say strategy, but just approach with buyers and sellers to really kind of get them to understand the whole process?
Absolutely. That's all part of who I am. So if I were speaking with you and you were selling a house, I would want to know basically how much you know about selling a house. So Michael, how many houses have you sold? And so give me an answer.
I've owned my homes. I've never sold anything myself. I had somebody else take care of it for me.
Okay. So you have had realtors handle the sale mm-hmm. for you.
Yes, right? Ma'am.
So what went well with that and what didn't go well? So I want to find out what's in your head. Mm-hmm. Like what went well, right? What did the realtor do that was the best realtor you ever had? And then what was the worst case scenario you had? Mm-hmm. So now I have a picture of your expectations, right? And so whatever you tell me, that's going to guide me. So if you say to me, oh, well, you know, they helped me get the right price on it. They helped me stage my house. They helped me through the negotiation, and I'm going to say wonderful, because that's me. I'm going to do that for you. You see, you've already had that experience and you liked it. So I'm going to dwell on that. And then on the other things you said they did wrong, I'm going to say, well, I'm sorry that happened to you. You won't find me doing that.
Yeah.
So you want to get in their head. You learn by asking. You don't learn by telling.
Right.
So I want to know something about you. Why are you selling? Where are you going to? Now, that seems like very basic questions, but they're not really.
Yeah.
They're not really. How soon do you have to be there? One question that nobody seems to be asking, and I have forever, and that is, Michael, have you given any thought to what you would do if the house doesn't sell?
Yeah.
Now, I see the look on your face, and you haven't heard that before.
No, honestly, I have done about 150 of these interviews, and that is one that I've not heard yet.
Okay. And why would I ask that question? Because there is a possibility that if you price it too high or you don't get it in the right condition for the price you're asking, it won't. Because there's a certain percentage of MLS that doesn't sell on the first go around. Right? I mean, the listing runs out and it gets relisted with someone. That's called an expired listing or whatever. So you look at your MLS. And so there was a time when I could truthfully say 47% of our MLS doesn't sell on the first go around. Today, it might be 5 to 7%. But there's always a percentage in your MLS that doesn't sell with the first listing. You need to learn those stats. So I could say that to you, Michael. I could say 3 to 5% of all the listings that are entered as first-time listings in our MLS are not selling in this market. Would you believe that? And then you're going to be surprised as a homeowner because you can't believe that because everything's selling. Well, no, it's not. And the reason it's not, Michael, is because we can sell the worst-looking house in the worst part of town if the price is right. But we can't sell the best house in the best part of town if it's overpriced.
Right. And what I like about those conversations and the way that you frame that is you really take care of a lot of the objections that might come up down the road. You've already had the conversation and you've set those expectations so that when something does happen and they come at you with like, hey, we've already talked about this. Remember, we've kind of laid the groundwork for these different things coming up.
Well, yes, I don't quite handle it that way. It just depends on right. the objection. And then what I'm going to do is repeat what we talked about.
Right.
Because I believe in helping the buyer and the seller come around to their own belief. All right. I can ask you enough questions that when I get finished, you won't overprice your house. Because I'll keep coming back to you and saying, so why do you feel like, you know, the high end in your neighborhood's 550? So what causes you to feel you can go to 595 and get an appraisal for that? And I'm going to keep asking you that question because you see, I already know that's probably not possible. But I can tell you that and I can say, hey, Michael, you know, that is ridiculous. The highest price here is 550. You're looking at 595. It's never going to sell for that. No, I'm not here to argue with you. I'm here to lead you to your own conclusion. So tell me what an appraiser would have to see in your house to cause them to appraise it for $45,000 more than the best house sold for in the neighborhood. Because you see, I'm here when you pick a price and you're going to pick it. I'm not. I'm here to defend your price. That's what you hire me for. This is like a football game. Your price is my goalpost. And I'm here to defend your price. So I have to defend your price first to the buyer and the buyer's agent to get them to come here and look. Then they write an offer and I've got to defend that price with the appraiser. And then lastly, in case you didn't know it, Michael, we have something called an underwriter and they sit in an ivory tower in Des Moines, Iowa. I think that's where it is. And they take all that data in and they look at the appraisal. And if they think the appraiser's wrong, they get on the internet themselves and they drop a protractor and they draw a circle around where you live and they come up with their own price so they can cut that appraisal. So there's four people we have to sell the price to. So find me out of all the comps we've just looked at in your neighborhood and homes that are like yours. Find me three properties that you want me to use to defend your price.
Yeah. I think that approach, it really does, especially for somebody that, you know, I'm sure the vast majority of your sellers that you're dealing with don't have the experience, and, you know, they're just, you know, kind of taking things at face value and don't necessarily, have that experience to be able to come up with, a comparable price on their own, to where having your experience really does help.
Your more seasoned sellers are more likely to overprice than your newbies who don't know as much. You see, they know they don't know. Your more seasoned sellers are the ones that want to overprice because they know everything. And so I don't want to argue with them about their expertise. I just want to keep going back to, all right, help me defend the price. And if we put it at that price and it doesn't sell, what are we going to do next? Right? What are you going to do next? So we put it at 595, and average days on the market right now are 15. And day 16, we have hardly any lookers and we don't have any offers. Now, what are we going to do? Are we going to regroup on the price? Are we going to stay where we are, thinking that if we continue doing the same old thing, we'll get a different result? You know, you remember when we did the volcanoes in eighth grade or seventh grade? Okay. You don't put in the right ingredients, your volcano doesn't spew.
Right.
And that's what we're doing here. You're putting in the wrong ingredients, your volcano is not going to work.
Right.
And honestly, they will giggle just like you are. I mean, that sounds kind of stupid probably to you for me to say that, but they will. And when they do that, they loosen up and they don't dig in. They honestly don't dig in at all. And so, it's bringing them back to logic, because it's just very hard to fight the truth when you have statistics. I'll tell you my Mr. Brown story, because it's one of my favorites. I had an older gentleman calls me to sell his house years ago. Somebody from church, some lady from church, told him to call me, that, you know, she'd done business with me, and I get there and I do the Gilligan's Island tour and we get in the kitchen and now we're talking comps, and he's looking at the sales and he's got a 4-bedroom, 3-bath with a pool. Wife died 15 years ago. The house has stopped in time. And, so he's looking at the comps, and I don't even know what the numbers were. So let's just say that the numbers were 250 and he wants 300. And I said, well, Mr. Brown, you know, how in the world are we going to justify 300,000? And I'm talking to him about it. And he says to me, well, listen, he goes, I have time to test the market. He says, I'm not in any hurry and I have plenty of time. Now, I got tickled and I looked across the table at him. I'm thinking, he's 90. And he thinks he has time. I really like this guy. So I reached across the table and I patted him on the hand and I said, Mr. Brown, can I be honest with you? He says, absolutely. That's what I got you here for. My friend said, you tell me the truth. I said, okay, I'm going to do it. And you're probably going to be mad at me, but I'm going to do it anyway. He goes, go ahead. I said, Mr. Brown, don't tell me you have time. You're 90 years old. You can't even afford to buy green bananas. To which he just died laughing. And I said, let's quit fooling ourselves here now, right? You don't have any time. You make the decision to put this house on the market at a price it'll sell for, so you can move on to do what you want, or before too long, your kids are going to make that decision. So what do you want to do? All right. He just popped up and said, well, my kids aren't making any decisions. I said, well, if you go the way you're going, they are. And he goes, nope. I said, okay, let's get back down to what we can sell this house for. And he goes, okay, put her at 250. You know, but you have to be willing to do things like that. Right? I mean, I already told him I'm going to be honest with him. He agreed that that was okay. So once they agree with you, it's okay. You can say most anything to them.
Yeah.
Because absolutely, they're giving you permission to tell you the truth. So I always say, I can tell you the truth, or I can tell you what you want to hear. What would you like me to do? And I've never had anybody say lie to me. because they really don't want you to, but they do want you to agree with their price.
Right. Absolutely. Right. So coming back to the, you know, all of the organizations that you're involved in and all the teaching and training that you do, what was it that, you know, made you want to get involved in these organizations and share all, you know, your wealth of knowledge to agents, like you said, internationally now?
Well, again, I was taught, you had a very smart grandmother and mother. Both of them had IQ, signed up to belong to Mensa. I kind of got left out on that one. But, you know, my grandmother used to say, you're not on the earth to mark time. You're on the earth to make a difference in somebody else's life. And so you're here to do something to give back, because that's your only legacy. All the stuff you've accumulated, any money that you've got, any jewelry that you have, whatever, that's just stuff. That's just stuff. But if you have the ability to help somebody, to touch somebody else's life in some way, there's your legacy. I can pick up the phone. I can call any state in the nation. I can call Spain. I can call France. Somebody will help me with something because I've already paid it forward. And so if I have some knowledge that will help somebody do better, I live in abundance. I don't live in scarcity. And that makes me better, because you cannot get up in front of a group and speak or teach or lead a conversation without having to bone up on it again.
Yeah.
So that helps me stay on top of things. Now, don't ask me to teach TikTok, because forget that. I'm not your person, okay?
Right.
Scripts, dialogues, getting listings, working with buyers, getting things closed, doing all the basics. This old girl is here, and I can do that, because I've closed over 6,000 of them, so I figured out how to get them closed. And that's the other thing, too, Michael. When sellers tell me they're interviewing agents, then I have fun. I had one old guy call me, and he said, "Want to talk to me? He's interviewing agents." And I said, "Oh, okay." I said, "I don't know if you're going to want to talk to me." And he said, "What do you mean?" I said, "I don't interview well." To which he laughed. And I said, "I've never been on a job interview in my whole life. And I really don't know how to do that. So would you be comfortable if we make a time that works for you and me, and I come over and let's talk?" He goes, "Okay, that worked." And so then I went and asked him some questions, et cetera. And then we set the time. And he goes, well, wait a minute. He goes, "But before we finalize this, I want to know how much you're going to charge me." So I thought, well, I'm going to have some fun. So I said to him, "I don't know. I haven't seen your house yet." He goes, "What's that got to do with it?" He's real crusty. And I said to him, "Well, it has a lot to do with it." And he goes, "What are you talking about?" I said, "Well, if it's ugly, we charge more. Because ugly houses are harder to sell. So I'll see you Wednesday at 2, and we'll talk about it." And he went, "Okay." But somebody else would have immediately gotten into a real estate fee discussion with him. "No, I'm not going to do that. I don't know this person. He's on the other end of the phone. He don't know me. I'm going to talk to him about it when I get there." And so when I got there, and he showed me around the house. We had to sit at the dining room table because too many pills on the kitchen table. And he says, "So what do you think?" Now, I had forgotten what I said to him. You know, this old girl's not that smart. I couldn't remember. And so I said, "Well, I think you have a very nice house." It was a waterfront house by the country club. "So you have a very nice house, and it's very saleable." And he goes, "That's not what I'm talking about." And I went, "Okay. So fill me in." Obviously, I said something I forgot. He said, "You said you charge more if it's ugly. So what are you going to charge me?" I said, "Oh, I forgot about that. Oh, don't worry about that. It's a really nice house. We're just going to go with the normal fees. Is that all right?" He goes, "That'll work." That was the end of it. So, you know, you just don't have to attack every little objection that somebody throws out to you. You don't have to go on the defense mode. You don't have to get in a debate mode with these people. But agents do that. They do. I don't. And to end the conversation about that little old guy, here I am 79 calling little old people, because I'm little old people. He said to me, well, you know, I'm interviewing agents. And I said, yeah, you told me that. He said, well, I interviewed an agent named Joan. And I knew Joan. And he goes, what makes you different than Joan? Now, somebody else would start trying to tell him. And he had his hands folded and he's leaning across the dining room table. So I do the same thing. And I say to him, I say, well, to tell you the truth, I really don't know a whole lot about Joan. But I have a really burning question I need to ask you. Is that all right? He goes, yes. I said, well, you interviewed Joan, right? And now you're talking to me, right? He goes, yes. So would you please tell me why Joan can't close 100 houses a year like I do when Joan and all these other agents have all the same tools I have to work with? I can't promise you anything different than what Joan promised you. We all got MLS. I'll put a sign in your yard. I'll put an ad in the paper. I'll do some advertising, you know, whatever. They can't do anything different than I can do, and I can't do anything different than they can do. So I want you to tell me why they can't close 100 units a year, because that is foreign to me. I just don't understand it. And he got a big grin on his face. And he said to me, well, I don't know. I said, me either. So do you want to continue talking about Joan, or can we do paperwork to sell your house? And he goes, let's do the paperwork. We moved on.
Yeah.
So, you know, you don't, I could have sat there and given him every award I've got. You know, I've been named one of the most awarded agents in the state and the nation. I don't need to do that. I just wanted to find out, you know, is this what you want to talk about, or you want to get your house sold? And he moved on. And so people make challenges for themselves. I don't know if you've experienced that. You've done thousands of these interviews.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that especially when, you know, there's, you know, a challenging market or things like that, and people, you know, maybe are having a little bit of slump, you know, in their year. I think those things can definitely come up, and the stress of those, you know, challenging times can come across in those conversations and make things, you know, more, you know, put agents more on the defensive mode. But I really love your approach of just being honest with people and not, you know, not get into the debate of things. There's a reason why you called me. Let's get to that part of the conversation.
Right. Exactly. I mean, you don't need to debate the buyer or the seller. I'm there to help. I'm there to answer questions, give advice, and make something happen. You know, And if I really have to talk about what makes me different, I just had this conversation not long ago and said to the seller, you know, the only thing I can tell you that might be a little different about me is I get them closed. Mm-hmm. No attorney or title company or anybody in town will bet against me get something closed. Mm-hmm. So if something happens and an issue comes up, then and only then will you see what I can do to take care of it. That's when I have to put on the cape and take flight. And you don't want to see that because you have an issue and I don't want you to have one. But if your agent can't put on the cape and take the flight and solve that issue for you, then perhaps that's not a strong enough agent. So you need to look at other things other than, can you get me my price? Can we get it to closing? Can you figure out how to solve the issues that are going to come up? And they do come up because Murphy's Law prevails in any closing, even a cash closing. Something's going to happen and I've got to jump in and fix it. So, you know, you won't know what I can do until the time comes, and I pray that never happens.
Yeah. So before I let you go, I do have to ask, because you were on a closing, you know, this morning before we hopped on here. Yeah, and you've mentioned it, 79 years old. What's keeping you doing this? Why are you still hustling as hard as you are?
Well, there was a time in my life, Michael, like everybody goes through, and some people listening to this may be going through it right now. There was a time in my life, you know, when I was struggling to keep my head above water. You know, there were times when, you know, there wasn't enough money to buy all the groceries I needed for the kids. you know, time, you know, when I couldn't buy a new car and I needed one. I don't have to do that anymore. God is good. I've been blessed. If nothing ever else ever happens to me, you probably won't ever meet another agent that's had the blessings in real estate and all the way around that I've had. So I get to do whatever I want to. You know, think back about grandma and grandpa. They've reached the age where they get to do, say, and be whatever they want to do. And I have no reason to sit at home because I can. I don't have a reason to do that. You know, today I'm in good shape financially. I can afford to work or not work. It doesn't make one bit of difference. It doesn't change my lifestyle one iota whether you list your house with me or not, or whether you buy a house from me or not. It's not going to change my lifestyle at all. But as long as I have the wits and the physical ability to help people, I'm going to continue doing it. And that's just it. And, you know, God will let me know when the time is I can't do that anymore. And I'll have something physically happen, or hopefully not mentally. You know, I can hang with the best of you. I can definitely hang with the best of you. Now, I may not be able to hit the dance floor and stay all night like I used to because of the arthritis in the knees, but I promise you I can get out there with you.
There you go. Well, I really do appreciate it. And, you know, I think, like you talked about earlier, leaving that legacy, and with everything that you're doing with all the, you know, all the coaching and the teaching that you're doing, I think you're definitely leaving quite the legacy for yourself.
May I say one thing about the organizations, Michael?
Yeah, absolutely.
People need to work towards their designations, and particularly their CRS designation. That's like the PhD in real estate. When you do that and you go to those conferences, you are hanging with people that are at or above your level. And the only way you learn and grow is to get with somebody that knows a little more than you do. Because if you only sit with people who are like you, that's the people you're going to learn from. So, you know, success is created by getting out there and getting with people that cause you to expand your mind and learn other things. And that's what's helped me. So between CRS and Women's Council of Realtors, you know, those are two of our larger NAR societies. In fact, Women's Council of Realtors is the oldest society in the National Association of Realtors. They're all about education, so is CRS. So I would say to people, and not that all the other designations aren't great, I got a whole list of them, like alphabet soup, you name it, I got one. but those are two of the strongest organizations. And that's where I've learned the most and been able to share and give back. And the other thing about that is referral business. That's what we're about. Repeat and referral business. You go out of town to a meeting somewhere, you meet somebody, and then it may be a year later and they have somebody that's moving to your town, or you have somebody that's moving to their town. Now you can refer to somebody that you have actually looked in the face, met, had a conversation with. And I can do plenty of business just on a referral basis. So we forget, when we're talking about lead gen, we forget that we all need to be prospecting our fellow realtors. So don't sit in front, and you know, this is your business, so you're going to be mad at me for this. Don't sit in front of the computer all the time learning something. Decide you're living in Minnesota and there's going to be a probate class in Clearwater, Florida, and the weather's not so good. Fly to Clearwater. Write your trip off. Take you a couple extra days on the beach. Go to class, meet somebody, and learn something. And write off your trip. And that's what education's all about. Go to NAR meetings. Go to the CRS celebration meeting. I'm flying out next week to Denver, to Star Power in Denver. That's your top agents in the nation are going to be teaching those sessions. And they're out like I am selling real estate. They're not motivational speakers. You know, God bless Buffini and Mike Ferry and all the people, Tom Ferry. We need those people. But I would much rather sit in a session where you are successful at something and you're saying, this is how I did it. And so I don't want people to forget that part of the education, because yes, it costs money. They whine about it. Oh, I got to pay $800. Well, guess what? If your average sale price is $500,000 and you get one buyer or one seller referral, hello, you've already earned it. And it's paid for your trip. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to be preaching.
No, no, that's, I mean, I very much subscribe to the, you know, getting that, you know, building those referral partnerships with fellow agents, you know, across the country.
Well, maybe I'll get a few referrals here if you put out my phone number and all.
That's right. Absolutely. We will definitely put your information there in the episode description for everybody. But again, I really do appreciate you taking the time to talk with us today.
My pleasure. And I thank you for inviting me. And I wish you luck with what you're doing.
I really want to thank Alexis for joining us today. Her career and achievements have been nothing less than incredible. And it's easy to see why she's reached such success in our short time together. So once again, if you think you or someone else on your team has an incredible story or real estate tips to share with our community, send us a message at feedback@smartagents.com. Well, that wraps things up for this episode, but remember, follow the show wherever you listen to podcasts and make sure to subscribe to the Smart Agents YouTube channel. Again, I'm Michael Walter, and we'll see you on the next episode.